The Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show is coming up next, right here on the TJRS Radio Network online radio at its best.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
It's not acceptable to call me a nigger.
It's not acceptable to call me a spick.
To call me a chink.
To call me a fag.
It's not acceptable to call me a kike.
It is not acceptable to call me a retard or call yourself or your friends retarded when they do something foolish.
The R word is the same as every minority slur. Treat it that way and don't use it.
Spread the word to end the word.
Online radio at its best. Online radio at its best.
Hey, 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 good install.
If you're resident, map of the South.
Let's do this.
I'm telling you, I am first very honored that you would join me tonight.
He has a very limited time spot, so we want to bring in Mr. Alan Farrell right away.
Hey, how are you, Kathleen?
You know what? I'm going to make you do what I do, baby.
Man, what's crack-a-lackin', baby? What's crack-a-lackin'?
It's time for the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show.
Don't try to call me out, princess. You can take your love and true purpose and stick it. She's a bitch.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
This week on the Serious Side.
I've offered negotiations around that kind of balanced approach. And so far we've gotten rebuffed because what Speaker Boehner and the Republicans have said is we cannot do any revenue. We can't do a dime's worth of revenue. So what more do you think I should do?
The president got his tax hikes on January 1st. This discussion about revenue, in my view, is over. It's about taking on the spending problem here in Washington.
Whatever challenges come before us, I will always believe our nation's best days lie ahead. God bless.
There are nearly 800,000 kids reported missing every year. We teach our kids about stranger danger, but the statistics behind the abductions are rather shocking.
Good morning and welcome to the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Good Sunday morning to you folks. Today is April 28th. 2013, and you're listening to The Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TJRS Radio Network online radio at its best. And I'm J. Ryle. Of course, I never share the stage by myself. Let me introduce you to some of the very best in the business. First up, he's gone from most faithful listener to one of the most controversial members here on The Serious Side. Let's say good morning to the one and only, you know him, Steve from Indianapolis. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good morning, J. Ryle. Good morning, everyone.
Next up, she is the host of the True Purpose Development Show. She's also the host of Ladies First Radio and the J. Ryle Show. She's an author of the book Pregnant in the Spirit, TV personality out of Detroit, Michigan. Let's say good morning to the one and only Dr. Princess Ardea, the Queen of Inspiration. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Jay. Good morning, Steve.
And certainly last but not least, the man who gets the first and last word here on The Serious Side, the head honcho, so to speak. Let's say good morning to the main man, Mr. L.E.S., my main man, I should say. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing this morning?
Well, it's doing great. I'll answer for him, Mr. L.E.S. A great day for you, folks. Once again, that phone number is 347-850-1272. You can participate in the conversations, and we have plenty to talk about, so let's get right into it. First up, blame it on the GOP, from sequestration to the government to government gridlock. Should the Republicans be blamed for everything that's going wrong in Washington right now? Let's start the conversation off with Mr. L.E.S. Mr. L.E.S., man, should we look at the GOP and say, listen, you guys are the blame to what's happening with our country right now?
We could, Jay, but we need to take it back further. When we did have the Blue Dog Democrats in there, and we should have forced hands at different things. To me, we had control of the House at one point in time, and you know, to me it seems like Republicans are better at forcing that. They're people hands at what they're doing than Democrats. So, you know, at some point in time, we got to stand up and say, what can we do to make this better? And I mean, if you got a party that's always going to say no, you got to find another way to get around. So, you know, if you got to work with something, you got to come up with some type of different plan of what we're coming up with, and it's not working.
So now, when you say come up with a different plan, what do you mean by that?
I mean, like I said, when we had the Blue Dog Democrats in there, when we had control of the House, in some way, shape, form, or fashion, I think we could have forced their hands to something and done something different. I mean, it was amazing to me that George Bush and what's his name, the Vice President at the time,
Dick Cheney.
Were able to push through everything that they wanted to, but this administration can't. It's amazing to me that they got everything that they wanted pushed through, and it's amazing to me we can't, with this administration, get things pushed through. It seems like the Republicans are better at pushing through what they want than the Democrats.
Dr. Prince Zaldia, same question. What's your response?
Okay, this is my opinion. I do believe that it is I'm not going to say the Republicans, well, they're a major cause to it. I will say that. It seems as though, and it not seems as though it is that way, and we see it all the time across the board with our president now, whether it's the fact that he's a Democrat or the fact that he's black or just both things together. Just the fact that there is change and there is someone, I think, that has never been in the office such as he, who is really for the people and not so caught up in the politics of government. And they're not accustomed to that process. So, but the country has been running this way for years. And for years, the Republican Party has been the one dominating in Congress. So I will say that yes, I believe that just the old system, the old process, America used to doing what America does, and let's not forget it was founded on the grounds of plantation. I mean, come on, nothing has changed. You still have some old people that are still there that have that same concept, that same mental process, and they are showing forth with our own president. So I mean, pick a reason why they don't work with him. He can't get stuff passed just as simple as the Republican Party can, okay? Because they gave and you know what? They gave
George Bush.
The Clintons the same. Well, no, they gave Clinton problems. You know, it wasn't. Okay. I believe that it wasn't as easy with Clinton as it was with Bush. You know, for the presidential candidate, for the president at the time. So okay. That would lead you to say, yes, the Republicans have an issue, or those people within the Republican Party, because I don't believe in judging everybody, because I'm sure there's some people on there who don't have the same old man, old American political viewpoint across the board. They are Republican for whatever reason they are Republican, you know. So, but... Yeah, the majority of the party as it stands now, yes, it has a great influence on maintaining the country in its status that it's been in for years, for generations, for decades, you know? So, okay.
All right. Steve, same question. I'm not sure. Do you need me to repeat the question? Same question. Need your answer.
Oh, no, I've got the posting on the board. You know,
okay.
The Republican Party, the GOP is just as much as the blame as the Democrat Party. I mean, look at the 08 financial crisis. A lot of people don't know. It started under the Clinton administration with the deregulation of the banking sector called Glass-Steagall was deregulated. So to sit here and blame the GOP for everything that's going on in America right now is asinine. It starts under even the first Bush president shipping jobs overseas. These problems go way back. Everything that's going on in this country, healthcare premiums in Massachusetts going up 25% because of Obamacare. People think they're going to get a free lunch. Democrats laughing. Remember Jerome laughing about regulations going up. And what they don't understand is who pays that extra cost. Look in the mirror, America. You pay that extra cost when costs go up because of regulations. You pay higher prices. So there's nothing to laugh about. Folks think they're getting a free lunch. If you want a free lunch, wait till you go to heaven. That's when it's free. While you're down here on earth, there's side effects for everything the government does. No, I don't care if you can point out anything they do, food stamps, what, there's side effects from it on this economy as far as prices are concerned. So dollar value going down, but to sit here and blame the GOP for everything that's going on in America is asinine. Even the air traffic controllers are blaming the president. They could have cut waste. They could have cut fraud and abuse. They didn't do it. Instead, we're sitting here furloughing air traffic controllers, and they could have cut waste, fraud, and abuse. And if you think the corporate elite is going to sit back and let you raise their taxes whenever the Democrats feel the urge to, you got another thing coming, because they're really the ones running the show. The only reason the corporate elite really care about taxes is because they need those federal contracts, which they benefit from. But Wall Street is not going to sit back and let you raise their taxes whenever the Democrats fill the earth. That will never happen. They want tax increases for specific reasons, and that's my comment on that.
You know, I guess the thing is, and it's now it's time for me to push you a little bit on that. You talk about taxes, and let me slide over to you, Mr. Elias. You know, that's the first thing that comes out of people's mouths when we're talking about the Democratic Party. You know, the Democrats want to raise your taxes. When all the information out there says that, you know, most of Americans won't be touched by any type of tax increase. It's just really that top 1%, people who can afford to do these types of things. I guess for me, and I think I understand the president's logic on this, Mr. Elias, it's like, listen, if you are in a situation where you're blessed, then you should be, you should have to pay a little bit more, because listen, they have all the money in the world to hide their money. I mean, you know, we talked about this during the presidential campaign with Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was paying what, 14% of tax on his taxes,
right?
And the
right.
Bottom line is that his secretary or some secretaries are paying more than that. This guy has rich guys have a way of beating the law. So yeah, I don't have a problem with rich people having to pay more taxes. What are your thoughts on that, Mr. Elias?
Well, I don't have a problem with them paying more taxes either. Anytime we were talking about Warren Buffett, where his secretary is paying more taxes than he is, I don't have a problem with it. And I always hear the same old line as Republicans saying that, well, if they pay more taxes, then what's going to happen is they're not going to invest in the country. Then they'll leave the country. You should leave the country like the guy did from Facebook. You know, get your ass out of this country, because, hey, this is where you're making your money at. Pay your taxes. Pay your fair share of taxes. There's nothing wrong with a rich person paying his fair share of taxes. There's no reason that I, as an American citizen who works my ass off every day, should have to pay more taxes than a rich person. Pay your fair share of taxes and just call it a day. There's no reason on earth that a rich person shouldn't pay it. I'm sorry. I just don't see that. I can't accept that fact.
You know, Dr. Prince's idea, one of the things that Republicans are always saying that, and I guess this is one of the huge things in Washington, we talk about, well, you know, can we blame the GOP for some of the issues that are going on? You know, let's use some of the examples of some of the things that they used to support and they no longer support. And it goes back to a comment that you made. Is this a situation where the reason why they're not supporting these things is, two, they just want to get this man out of office, or it's because of the color of this man's skin? Because, you know, this is a proven fact that there are agenda items that Republicans used to be for, all of a sudden now they no longer support. What say you?
Well, Jay, you know what, honestly, it goes without saying. Proof is in the pudding. What do you think? he's okay. It's more than one thing, and I don't like to say it because, you know, I don't like to play that race card. But I'm going to tell you, it is a black thing in this case. I mean, it's a shock, and it really shows proof, and we've seen it. And in conjunction with that, even if he was, I believe that even if he was a white man with the same view, perspective that he has, there would also be conflict. Because people don't like to change the way they do. One of the hardest things in life to transition to another plan or a new way of doing things is when you are dealing with someone who is going against the grain of the way you are used to operating. And when you have someone that is used to going against the grain from the way you are used to operating, you're going to come up against that. This, our president now, is not involved or interested in your political viewpoint. I mean, not the political viewpoint, I apologize. Your politics, your being caught up in the politics and letting that be the deciding factor for how he makes his decisions. But rather, he really is for the people, seriously. And he also tries to unite he tries to bring forth that same concept as he deals with the GOP. I love it. But even if he was a white man, they would have this problem because he is a man that has come with change. But to add fuel to the fire, he's also a black man that has come with the idea of change. And it is not acceptable.
16 minutes after an hour, you're listening to The Serious Side of the J. Rouse Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network online radio. And it's best. The phone number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. You can participate in the conversation. We're talking about right now the GOP. Can we blame everything that's going wrong in Washington on the GOP? Let's talk about sequestration here, Mr. Elias. You know, the bottom line is finally Congress came through and had a vote for the Nations Airlines, talking about a situation where we had furloughs going on and it was causing major flight delays. And obviously, anytime you are in a capitalistic type of nation where capitalism runs rampant and the way it should be, actually, you know, you can't have airplane delays and airline delays. You just can't have that because, you know, that really affects commerce. So obviously they passed legislation to continue to fund air traffic controllers. But, you know, the bottom line is, and this is something that we talked about here a while back, and we talked about sequestration. We said, you know, the reason why Congress and, you know, government put this thing in place, because it was supposed to be a situation that's so bad that it would prevent us going down that avenue, that Congress would look at this and says, you know what, we do not want to turn down this street. We want to turn the other direction. This is supposed to be something that should have been a deterrent. Yet and still, and I'm going to say this, thanks to the Republican Party, they made that right turn instead of that left turn. And so now we're starting to really and truly see the effects of that, Ms. Elliott.
Well, yeah, we are, Jay. But correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't it a two-party system there? Wasn't it Democrats and Republicans that agreed to this? You know, like I said, man, I mean, the Republican Party has got the nation in a hold pattern. And they're going to continue to have that in a hold pattern because of the filibuster system, which we've never had before. And, it's ridiculous that we even allow this crap to happen. And you know, I can't sit here and blame them only. You know, we as a nation, as Steve so eloquently put it, we as a nation didn't get off our lazy ass and go vote. And we keep putting up with the same old crap. If your congressman or your senator is not doing the job that you want them to do, find out. See what they vote for. Know what they vote for, and if they're not voting for what you want or what you want to put in place, then vote their ass out of office. That's the only way you can speak out against anything.
You know, Steve, you know, I know that you are a guy that's all about numbers. You know, one of the things you always talk about is the deficit, and you talk about how, you know, the bottom line is we don't get our financial crisis in order. We're going to run into some issues. Now, let's talk about the Republican Party, the fight within, because, you know, the GOP is not only fighting Democrats, but they're also fighting a certain element within their base. So let's talk about that a little bit. What do you think about that whole, what do you think about the civil war within the GOP ranks, which really, in my opinion, stops a lot of legislation from going through because, you know, rumor has it that the Speaker of the House, Boehner, there are some deals that he really wants to work, but he's afraid of that small fraction in his party known as the Tea Party. What say you?
Well, see, a lot more Americans are conservative than we think. See, Bill Clinton defined himself as fiscally conservative, socially liberal, meaning he didn't care about, you know, if you're gay, your homosexuality, different things of that nature. See, if that was the platform of the GOP, and that's type of a, it's kind of a libertarian platform, but, you know, it's just because, you know, it kind of is, but it's kind of not. With that type of platform, the GOP would probably win every single election. So when black people, when I see people supporting Clinton, there's conservatism in the mix there that they don't really account for, and that's called being fiscally conservative. One of the strongest dollars in American history was under the Clinton administration. So
one of the what? I'm sorry, I missed that.
One of the strongest American dollars in the mid-90s was under the Clinton administration. The dollar was worth its weight in gold. So whenever I see people supporting Clinton, there's conservatism there. They're supporting conservatism indirectly, whether they directly know it or not know it, whether they're ignorant of it or not. So the issue with the GOP is these old, hey, I don't care if you get raped, you still can't have an abortion. These old socially issues that's not going to fix the economy, not going to get the debt and deficit under control, I want to define marriage and your state can't have any say-so in it. All this old classic stuff from way back in the day. Because, I mean, let's be honest. Ever since television's been sold on a massive level in the late 70s, the country's been going down. The shipping jobs overseas. Television has distracted Americans. You know, if you look at before television ever really came out in America, the economy was doing a lot better. Politics weren't even nowhere near as important as it is today. But Americans have got themselves distracted by TV, too much TV and internet. So they don't really care. But the issue with the GOP is social issues as well as not illegal immigration issue. That doesn't really benefit the GOP. Because like I've been telling people, look at Mexico. How do they vote? They voted to take the guns away, gun rights away. They heavily restricted in Mexico. They do not vote conservative unless they're upper class and the Latinos. So that issue, I don't know what the GOP is going to do about that. But socially, you need to leave the social issues alone. That will strengthen the GOP, and then they will probably win just about every election because a lot of people like the Clinton model of a strong dollar, a strong economy. He deregulated the banks, which I think caused a catastrophe in the later years after he got out of office. But that's the GOP needs to move to leave social issues alone, man, because you got guys like Richard Murdoch in Indiana made a rape comment and lost an election.
Right.
It's stupid. And that's my comment on that, Jay.
Well, you brought that up, Mr. Elias. What comment did he make, just in case for those of us who, because I didn't hear it, I just want to make sure people are aware of what he said.
What he said was that if a woman was raped, she still can't have an abortion. And then they went in and voted against him, and he lost the election. He was a Senate. He was running for Senate. So just keep on social issues. Understand, this is not the 60s or the 50s on social issues. And get the economy back on track. Then if you want to focus on the social issues again, then we can bring that up. But if we're not going to get the economy back on track, I don't really care about what you're doing in your bedroom. We need to get the economy back on track, and that's my comment on that.
So, Dr. Prince's idea, one of the things that Steve said here as we wind down this segment, talked about how the GOP, if they change a few things, they can win elections, you know, going away in the future. And I'm saying I doubt that very seriously. As long as they have the mentality that they have when it comes to immigration, I don't see how the GOP is going to get past their Latino problem. It's the fastest growing segment of people here in this country. And if someone has their radio up, they can turn that down. But the bottom line is that there's no way until they get that problem squared away that they're going to be able to, in my opinion, do anything when it comes to elections. There's just no way. They have to figure out a way to close the gap with Latinos. Your thoughts?
Okay, Latino, gays, everybody, okay? I think that it is, I know Steve, you made a comment. You said that that they don't need to worry about the socialist issues, let's get the economy together. And I'm going to say that it all goes together. It's like they're all items are on the hot seat when it comes to America. Because if you don't get the social issues together, that means you negate to pay attention to the individual groups, the immigrants, the gays, the church folks, whoever. You refuse or negate to pay attention to their needs, thus they lack interest in the government, period, or anything else the government has going on. A lot of people right now, even currently, are more involved in the decision-making and the politics more so than they have been in the past because this president seems to care socially. He seems to care about the people, okay? Otherwise, and in past, people were starting to lose any type of faith, and some still maintain that loss, that feeling of hopelessness as it relates to politics. But there has also been a shift for a positive for people to really start even getting involved with the politics to understand what is the Congress? What is the Congress and what are they saying? Because other times people didn't vote because they didn't feel it mattered. Okay? So I think that it's really, really important. Also, I will say this. No, I don't believe if the GOP, if the Republicans decided to start accepting passing things that should have been passed, or paying attention in the way they should be paying attention socially. I don't think that it would matter at this point because they have truly shown their colors. They are no longer a secret as it relates to who they really are. And that's something about truth. Once you see the truth, it sets you free, and it also it dominates your direction, what you perceive. And now people are starting to see the truth and perceive the Republican Party, or I'll just say the whole political game as it really is, as it truly is, because there's someone in the office that has stood up for change. He has come in and he said, no, this is not how we're doing it. He's gone totally against the grain of society, against the grain of politics and the way it has been practiced for generations. So what we're seeing, I don't even get fluffed about it. I don't get really upset about it because what I really see is what is standard for change. When there's change, there's chaos. After the chaos, it brings peace. Because why? Truth is revealed. Now people are set free in their thinking, and they're now starting to move forward freely in being involved in the process of change. Okay, so we'll be all right. Trust me.
Let's bring in our political strategist, Jerome Esprit from EspritRadio.net. Good morning, Jerome. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great, man. We're talking about the GOP, and we're asking the question this morning, should we blame all the problems that are going on in Washington on the GOP, or is there a situation where the blame should be shared amongst both parties? Your thoughts?
I don't know. I think you have to blame them. They have been probably in this mindset for about 25, 30 years. Like, so they've been gradually coming to their extreme point of not compromising unless you give them everything they want. And the Democrats have been practicing more malpractice than anybody over those years by actually giving in. So if you look at the policies, even the president, once the GOP came in, he started talking about some things that he probably shouldn't have even brought up on the table because the Republicans aren't budging an inch on how conservative they are. So, yes, they are to blame, but it's not technically a popularity contest. It's who can make the other look bad. That's why when the Republicans, you know, hold something up, they'll blame the president, and then when they pass something, they'll try to take credit for it. So they're at the same time lying to you, and who's responsibility is that to figure out what the truth is. But truly, it is the Republicans' inflexibility to actually see a bigger picture or to get away from filtering money to the top. It's just pretty much what they've been doing over, and the Democrats to a large degree, but they kind of partnered in doing it. And now that you have a society that doesn't really want that anymore, and when you have financial problems, you want to cut it. And the Republicans still want to give rich people their perks, at the same time cut poor people and blame them for the problems.
Right, and we were talking about that earlier as well. It's the fact that you look at what's going on with the GOP, and I'm glad you came in, Jerome, because you definitely reminded me of the fact that, or reminded us, I should say, the fact that you're right. Republicans is like all or nothing. Either you do it our way, or we're not going to do anything at all. I mean, we've seen too many situations like this, Ms. Delius, that the GOP has drawn that line in the sand, and a lot of Democrats, they really have gotten upset, not only at their own party, but at the president in general, because it seems that every time they need him to bend a little bit, he does, and he gets credit for being the bigger person and taking the higher ground. But at the end of the day, we're not getting a full package. We're getting a cake that's half baked. Your thoughts, and we'll make this the final word on this set.
Well, Jerry, we have a caller that wanted to get in on this section. So,
okay, why don't we go ahead and bring that person in? Good morning, welcome to the Serious Side. Who am I speaking with?
Yeah, my name is Frederick. How you doing?
What's going on, Frederick? How are you doing? Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm in Florida, Jacksonville, Florida.
Jacksonville, Florida. Your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Well, I just don't on the blaming the Republicans or really blaming anyone, Democrats. I think the understanding bottom line that we need to have is that these folk we put in office represent us.
Right.
And in my studies, I really can't see too much difference between the Democrat and Republican as of late. I heard the caller before, one of your speakers speaking before about how well Clinton did. And part of it, what he did to make our government, quote unquote, give us this pseudo surplus of money that we had, is he reduced the military by 2/3. He did the welfare reform, but he, if you look it on record, he fought it against it, but the Republicans forced it through because they had the Senate at the time, and he fought it. But then, after he saw how well it went over, then he started taking credit for it, and that's his public record. So when we talk about it's Republicans' fault for this, that, and the other, it's also Democrats' fault, but it's ours. These people do what they do because we don't pay attention and we don't kick them out. And as far as when you talk about the other person talk about the social issues and losing the elections,
right.
When the Democrats lost seats in 2010, the Democrats didn't run around and scream, how can we, and they're supposed to be inclusive, how can we uninclude more people to get their votes back. I'm talking about the Senate and House elections in 2010. They kept their platform, they kept their strategy, and they're still holding on strong. So when Republicans lose, a lot of people say, oh, you need to switch out and look and do something different. No, I think that you need to hold on to what you believe in. And if the country falls apart like that, if people don't believe in you, then you still hold strong if you believe that's true. Gay marriage or social, quote-unquote, entitlements or injustices, yes, you can deal with that. But the bottom line is a society has to have some kind of moral values and social standards. And as it shifts, as the sister said, as it shifts, there's going to be some changes and then things are going to balance out. But the question is, what society has thrived in a system in which anything goes, anything you want, gay marriage, unlimited immigration with no kind of boundaries, society doesn't survive like that. And I think that's where we're headed if we study our history.
But what about the evangelical? See, the evangelical vote is bigger than the Latino vote. That's why the gay marriage is an issue, because as Latinos convert to being evangelicals, they vote Republican. So that's why the Latino vote is not that big of an issue. The evangelical vote is one of the biggest groups out here. So what is your take on the evangelical vote?
The evangelical vote is powerful. And what some people confuse that is with, the quote-unquote separation of church and state. And there is no separation church and state. There is no, the Constitution says you just can't mandate a religion. But you can't tell me that you believe a person can be, if you want to use Christianity, a person can't be a Christian between the hours of 9 and 5 when he's at work, and then he can be a Christian after that and his decisions his life. If that's the case, then your God is not your God. Your job is your God. So we have to be evangelicals with their power here. They're pushing this religion. They're pushing their doctrine, and a lot of people nowadays are fighting it. So you have to address it. The evangelicals need to understand that they cannot force their values onto somebody else, and that is the separation. But if you believe your God is telling you to do that, how can you look at another man and say, you know what, God is telling me to do this, but my job is telling me otherwise, so I'm going to vote that way? You can't do it. And when we come down to the basic values of people, that is what sets our country apart from other people. Core values and high standards, what we used to have. But now, and what the issue is, we look at this religious debate, we want to negate the gay debate, is the gay community is trying to switch the definition of marriage, according to my opinion, what my research has led me to believe, trying to switch the definition of marriage. The main issue they're saying is that I've heard thus far is that, okay, we can't will our if we died, we can't will our state over to our spouse, whatever you want to call it, or we can't come see our spouse if they're in the hospital because we're not relatives.
Now, a lot of evangelicals didn't even vote for Romney. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of evangelicals did not like Mitt Romney because he supported gay marriage in Massachusetts. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not a Romney fan at all. Don't get me wrong. And that's another thing, too. We like to polarize. This country like to polarize. They think, okay, if you don't like one, you got to like the other. I really disappointed in both. So
yeah.
I agree with a lot of things you guys say, but we have to have some standards. We have to hold the people accountable. I forgot, maybe you said it. They need to know if they don't act right, we gonna vote their behind up. But when it comes to Obama, I haven't seen him do anything different than Bush did. He's sitting lies and tells stories all day long and tells us what we want to hear, just like Bush did, just like Clinton did, just like anybody else does. He is no different. The economy is terrible. He claimed he's going to reduce the deficit, but he doubled it. He said Obamacare is going to be revenue neutral. It's not. It's even more than it's thought. We're going into trillions and trillions, more trillions of dollars in deficit. He's supposed to be this unifier. He hasn't. When the first 2 years of having being a president, he had the House and the Senate, couldn't get anything passed, still hadn't passed a budget since he's been in office. Even last year, he couldn't get a vote for this budget. There's a lot that he's lying about, and people just, I don't know why, are on his coattails.
All right, well, Frederick, listen, we have to move on, man. I appreciate you calling in and continuing to listen to the serious side, okay? Appreciate your phone call. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Jerome, you get the last word on this set. We have to move on. What do you have to say before we close it out?
Okay. Well, I don't know where to cover that. I think a lot of that was kind of unfair in a political sense. I mean, unless you understand the workings of how those systems work, you can't externally say what somebody's intentions are and whether they're successful at whatever their function is. So, for example, to say that the president hasn't been able to accomplish these things is not to remember that the Blue Dog Democrats, the Democrats were in Republican areas, held up just as much stuff as the Republicans do now. So he didn't have a clean slate of saying just because you're Democrat, everybody helped him out. You set a list of policies together to move forward, and then when you piecemeal them, like, it's like the post office. The only reason the post office has financial problems is because in the Constitution, you're supposed to fund the post office through Congress, and they have not funded it. So we have financial problems at the post office because Congress won't fund the post office. Those are not religious issues that Congress has. Those are fundamental issues that they have about working people. They figure if they break the unions, break all the Democratic strongholds, they don't have to appease the people. They can just do whatever the heck they want to. So the bigger picture of politics is what motivation is, opposed to us going into philosophical religious decisions on why somebody's acting in whatever interest. Sometimes the president does what he needs to do to get something done, and I think that is always missing in the conversation.
All right, well said. All right, folks, listen, we're moving on. Appreciate all the comments. Thank you so much for calling in. Coming up next, we're going to talk about George W. Bush. Dedication of his library this past week has brought his presidency back into the spotlight. We'll talk about it. It's the Serious Side. It is Sunday. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is your resident map of the South, Moms and Little Daughters. Kickstarting your weekend every Friday with Ladies First Radio, The Jay Rouse Show. A show for women, by women. Tune in every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as my co-host Princess Odelia and I discuss everyday issues and offer inspirational solutions. From the East Coast to the West Coast to all over the world,
Ladies First Radio keeps it real, spreading positivity one show at a time. So come be uplifted with Ladies First Radio, the J-Rouse Show. Every Friday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Ladies First Radio, the J-Rouse Show. A show for women, by women.
Hi, I'm Venus Williams. You know, I heard recently that the two main reasons for not getting an annual mammogram are limited access and fear. I know that there are low-cost and even free screenings at some hospitals and clinics, and I've even heard of mobile mammogram units in some areas. Talk about service. Look, I know getting a screening is not as exciting as shopping, but life is for living. So take the first step to breast health. Get the mammogram. For more information, please visit breastcancerawareness.com.
Whatever challenges come before us, I will always believe our nation's best days lie ahead. God bless.
It's 45 minutes after the hour, or a quarter till if you prefer, and welcome back in to the serious side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our phone number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. Let's say good morning to the cast once again. Let's say good morning to the very controversial Steve from Indianapolis. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good morning, everyone.
Let's say good morning to our political strategist once again, Jerome Esprit from EspritRadio.net. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Jay. How are you?
And, of course, let's say good morning to the one and only Mr. L.E.S. Good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing?
We also want to say good morning to the people who are listening worldwide. Thank you so much for tuning in with us and listening to us. We appreciate all the support. It's time to talk about President Bush. Was he really that bad with the dedication of the George W. Bush Presidential Library? The Bush presidency is back in the spotlight. So what do you guys think here? It looks like his approval ratings are starting to go up, Mr. Elias. They're now in the low 40s. So, I mean, is it one of these situations where time heals all wounds? What say you?
You know something, time don't heal all wounds. He was horrible. He was a horrible president. I don't agree with his tactics, his politics, or the way him or Dick Cheney handled their office. So, in my opinion, no. He was. I mean, when he sat there and said there's no reason to apologize for putting the people in Iraq, for putting these soldiers in Iraq, having all these soldiers killed in Iraq, there's no reason to apologize. And then hell no. In my opinion, he's an ass, and he shouldn't have any. I mean, you killed 34,000 soldiers that didn't need to be killed by putting them in Iraq, and then there's no reason for an apology. I don't have any sympathy or anything for this man.
Well, now, you know, you brought up something here when we're talking about George W. Bush. And is it a situation, let me go to you, Jerome, on this one. I mean, you know, listen, every president has to make decisions that he or she feels what's in the best interest of the nation. Can we truly say that, should he apologize for making decisions that he thought was in the best interest of this nation, Steve? I mean, sorry, Jerome?
No, it won't happen. I mean, the decisions that his father made and just all those bad decisions, they end up covering up. That's why his approval is going to go up. They count on short-term memory, right? And so if you just keep that policy going, the Bush Library, I don't know if you guys saw the correspondence there last night, but just having that joke of having a sign is saying the Bush Library and a sign pointing at that library and said, here's a library of those lies, that's something that needs to happen. We have to keep information out there readily available to people, because if you don't do that, they get the whitewash history like it's always been done. And that's all that's going on. He's going to appear to be charming, go laugh, have a beer with him, and you're going to kind of forget about all this other stuff. That's why the big push is always, you know, when does Obama take responsibility for what's going on? That is garbage and ridiculous as well, because those policies have long-term effects, and so you have to slowly undo them so that you can have a different outcome. But no, he's not going to apologize, and I don't look for one, because it's not going to happen. Nobody still apologizes. They want Jeb Bush to run for president, for creep's sake.
I think everyone wants, but his mother wants him to run. I think his mother's saying, hey, we've had enough Bushes, and I couldn't agree with him more. Let me go to you on this one, Steve. You know, once again, and I'll ask you the same question I asked Jerome. As the commander-in-chief, as the president of the United States, I mean, this is a person that has to make tough decisions, and even President Obama has said a time or two that he's made some mistakes. I mean, should a president apologize when they are executing the office and if they're doing what they think is in the best interest of the country?
Jay, you know, based on information that was given to him. And see, and that's the thing. That's key. People don't really talk about that. You know, was Bush really running the show? Was it Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld? I call them the devil twins. Were they running the show? Because, see, if they were running the show, and then we don't factor in the deregulation of the banking sector, the deregulation of Glass-Steagall under the Clinton administration. So to sit here and blame Bush for the financial crisis is insane. Both parties played a huge part in that. So that Bush, the issue I had with Bush was the debt deficit, Iraq War, Patriot Act. I mean, he was just tearing up stuff all across the board, just causing devastation and havoc all over the place. I mean, this guy was like almost like Lyndon Johnson on steroids. I mean, he had this great program. We're going to create a police state on top of an Iraq war, on top of debt and deficit. You know, Bush was just, man, this guy was just tearing up stuff all across the board, man. You know, I mean, my little brother and sister could have probably ran the country better. I mean, it was just a disaster, man. That's why I can't stand Bush, and I don't like Clinton either. There's very few I do like, very, very few. You know, this country, like I said, ever since the television was sold on a big level in the late 70s, this country's been going downhill ever since. And Americans are distracted by this TV tube. They don't care about politics. So we blame Bush, but who voted for Bush? I blame the American people, and that's my comment on that.
Dr. Princeton, do your thoughts.
Well, first of all, when people say, oh, ever since the TV got high, I want to make a comment on that first. Ever since we've made a big thing about TV and social media, you know, with the media and all this, things have gotten bad. I think things have been the way they've been for years, but now it's in the limelight because we have access to the information. It's been this way for years. It's not like something new. So, you know, now we're paying attention to it because technology has afforded us that opportunity to see what's really going on. Now, as far as Bush and about his book, I think that one of the things that we miss as a country, as a people in the country, is forgiveness. We are so hateful of Bush. Bush, 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 Bush. And yes, politically, he did not pass the bar in his tenure as president. And yes, he caused a lot of havoc, did a lot of things, I believe, as a result of ego, not using any type of wisdom of sorts, but he made decisions for our country that left a lasting impression via favorable or not favorable to people. And it caused for some things to be challenged, but I commend again our president now, who has, even in spite of all adversity, he has still been extremely productive, contrary to popular belief. And I hope Jerome later can give us that information he's given us on previous shows for other people who do not know it, on how to even go and do your homework, study to show yourself approval, and let's talk about what has the president really done. And I believe Jerome can give that information to that site, and you can go and look and drop your jaws and be enlightened in a new way. Now, I think that Bush should be forgiven. Any man, I mean, he's a human like anybody. And what did we talk about yesterday on the entertainment, on the Jay Rouse show? We were talking about love and forgiveness. Until we personally, even in our own personal lives, and believe me, life is a cycle, a universal cycle. We ourselves have our own cycle, and we are intertwined in the cycle of the universe, i.e. the cycle of how things are going with society as a whole. And as a whole, we wonder why we have so many issues in so many different ways, and a lot of it is the collaborative effort of unforgiveness, too.
Let me jump in here real quick, Dr. Prince. I have a question for you, and I'm going to push you a little bit on this. Let's say that you lost your son in the Iraq war because of an administration that told lies to go into war. It's well documented, the fact that they came to Bush and said there was no WMDs. He said, let's go get them. Let's go in. You know, I mean, so you lost your child behind that. Can you forgive George Bush for that?
I can't. I don't change.
Well, hey, you're a better person than I am, but go ahead and finish your
brother. I don't change with what I said yesterday.
I think it's easy for you to say that.
No, it's
because
not.
Because you're not
listen,
going
listen
through
here,
Dr. Prince, though, do you? I don't believe that.
Some of the things that I've been through, and I've talked about it in my family, some of the things that I've been through, you would drop your jaw to see that I honestly forgave. And I sincerely, in the bottom of my heart, have no malice towards him and wish the best. That is the honest truth. And I can do that from a greater wisdom. Somebody said, you know, people always talk about an agape love, and you can only love, only God can give me love like this. Well, God, life, universe, we were equipped with that ability. We choose to ignore it and accept responsibility of it, and thus we keep ourselves in the revolving door of our lives, in our world.
And Jay, it's either forgiveness or hellfire. You pick which one.
No, it's no hellfire. Your hellfire is the hell we're living here now. Okay, come on.
I don't want to turn this.
I forgive. I'm not trying to go there either. What I am saying though, when I hear people, this is a moment. Let's be honest, Jay. The real moment for discussion of this is because you can't stand George Bush's. I was going to say something else. You can't stand him. Okay, you're upset with him, and you're thinking the hell with him.
I can't stand the lies that he told to get what he wants. That's what I can't stand. I mean, you sat here and you told lies to get us in a war so that you can have these innocent children killed. Come on, let's be honest.
His life is more on the plate than ours. He's more in the limelight than ours. There have been things that you've done in your life that you can look back and say, dang, I can't believe I did that. Okay? But because it's just you or you and your little circle and the media's not shining the light on you and you're not responsible for the... Hold on.
4,000 people to go to war to die.
You
can't judge
his decision.
Why can't I judge him?
Does anybody judge you for the things you've done, the little things that you had to forgive yourself for?
I'm being judged all the time. So the bottom line is, for him to sit there and send people in the war, innocent kids in the war to die,
and say it's okay, it's bull to me.
There was no weapons of mass destruction. There was no reason for us to go in Iraq except for one thing. So let's let him go.
Would you be better if he just took himself to Iraq or someplace and hung himself? Would you guys hurrah at him
served for the war crimes that he committed. I would be better suited
How about letting it go?
We lost innocent lives. Let me jump in.
Everybody, take a deep breath. I know this is a very passionate, and it should be. It's a very passionate topic because, you know, like Mr. Elias is saying, there are parents that will never be able to share another birthday with their children. There are mothers that will never be able to see their sons. There are wives that will never be able to see their husbands, and vice versa. You know, there are people that will never be able to walk again because they lost a leg or lost both of their legs. So this war did take a toll on it. And, you know, and we can sit here and say it's a part of his job, but, you know, when your job is the most powerful person in the world, Jerome, you know, I mean, there should be some accountability. And Mr. Elias mentioned war crimes and things of that nature. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that real quick. And then I want to play a clip that President Bush said during his dedication of his library. Your thoughts, Jerome?
Now, they both, Bush and Cheney, have been subpoenaed by the International Court for War Crimes. They did that about 2 years ago. Now, which European country is going to extradite them is a whole nother story, right? But they already took steps to do that. Now, instead of saying in a big way, do you forgive him as an individual, that's a whole different story than you forgiving him for his actions on a billion people, right? And so just like LES's point, it's different forgiving me for breaking somebody's window, saying when I was little I did some things that I wouldn't be ashamed of, but I didn't send people to war to kill a lot of people. So the issue is if at the same time, if we did what South Africa did, you know, with the truth and reconciliation hearings and that kind of stuff, we would be better off as a nation because we would then admit, hey, this went extremely wrong, and now we can move on. But once we cover a lie and keep covering other lies, you're just trying to confuse other generations to pick a side. And that is what happened during the presidential election. It was like, we need to carry on the Bush tradition without talking about Bush did this, you know, and they're starting to confuse people. So if you just think, maybe I think it was last year, after 70 years, they actually extradited some guy who was a Nazi guard who worked in Detroit. That was 70 years ago. You're talking 7 decades. They didn't forget to say, just let him go. He's a retired auto worker now. They didn't do that. So why should you ask the nation to forgive being put in a horrible position without having some kind of reconciliation of it? And so I think we do probably need to, at least for future generations, say, here's what the truth is. Whether he made a mistake or not, or you should forgive him, is a whole other story. But it does need to be rectified. It needs to be cleared up.
And I'm not saying that it shouldn't be. Only thing I'm saying is that if we infuse the whole cycle of terror and infuse the whole cycle of trouble in a society through our collective effort of unforgiveness and hatred, harboring it, and judgment on this one person, let's accept what has happened and do things that will bring about a different result from a different thing. Forgive the man. At the end of the day, he is a man. He may look back himself and say, I can't believe I did that. Like, oh, my gosh.
To apologize, Iraq war was wrong. Well, Germany was wrong. How do you sit there and say that, and then you say, let's forgive him? He's not even saying
that
I'm saying that this is wrong.
Right.
He's saying
that's
all
foreign file
steps.
But you know what? But you know what?
He admitted it was wrong.
It's wrong.
It was
and forgive
wrong.
Him for his own forgive him for his own ignorance. And that's a person that I would have strong compassion for. Honestly, I would have strong compassion because he is living in deception. So until he realizes his error, then he doesn't move forward. So why am I mad at somebody who's completely, in spite of what we may think, people think that money makes everything. But at the end of the day, he has to go to sleep at night. And he may tell you because of his pride. And listen, one more thing. Because of his pride, he may say aloud that I will not apologize because the pride is just too much. Because it's too much to admit that. But you don't know what he really feels. You don't know. None of us know.
Let me ask you a question.
So point the finger.
If another leader from another country came over here and did the same thing to us, what would you want to do to that leader?
He would have to be handled how he should be handled. But I still, whatever was supposed to come to him, whatever was supposed to, however life cycle had for him, life going to get you, universe going to get you. The universe is a law that we cannot negate. That's right. You don't have to worry about it because life will take its course on him.
If it was that much, he'd have sent his damn kid to the same war.
In that scenario, they may be killed. They may be put to death. I'm not saying that in cases that is not the universal process for that particular person. I'm not saying that. But I am also saying that I'm not the person to decide whatever the universe has planned for that individual. Whatever happens is going to happen. And yes, there may be relief if there is justice served where that person is gone or whatever. I may feel justice was served, but I'm still not going to gloat in the demise of the person, period. I'm just not.
Okay. It's 5 minutes after the hour. 5 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the Jay Riles Show, broadcasting live on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. The phone number, once again, is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. And as you can tell by the tone and the very passionate conversation that we're having, we're talking about the presidency, or the legacy, I should say, of George W. Bush. His presidential library was dedicated earlier this week. All five living presidents were there to say some kind words. I thought Jimmy Carter was very short and direct. He just said, basically, you know, George Bush, he did, you know, one thing pretty much right, Jerome. He talked about it. And we never talked about this, and we need to talk about it. George Bush, as far as when it comes to Africa, guys, we have to give the man credit, don't we, Jerome? Because he really and truly, he did some things in Africa that other American presidents didn't do.
Okay. I don't know. See, that, I think that's where we get confused on saying, if I gave you $5 and shot your father, like, is that cool? Is that a cool exchange?
But he saved, but Jerome, you have to acknowledge that he saved millions of lives, though, Chief. I mean, you have to acknowledge that.
I understand. And what I'm saying to you is our humanity effort. Think about this from a strategic point and how you keep power. Like, what we're talking about is the difference in a leader opposed to somebody who's just running around roughshod. So the United States has to give an impression. It's a strategic advantage to feed some people because it's a part of how we disrupt other countries, right? And I'm not saying that those guys was not smart for doing that, but all of their hatred for Libya and all these other countries had to do with disrupting the African Union that Libya or that President Gaddafi controlled for, what, about 10 years? He was the head of the African Union. So for his work in Africa, it's a strategic thing that they fed people to get allies. It's just kind of what you do in warfare. So I wouldn't give you too much credit in doing that and then making up a story on somebody else and then killing them, because I would have to look at the big military strategy in it more than I have to be, more than I will narrow down my view on something like that. So just think as a strategist from my point, the bigger picture is always kind of like, you know, is it good to have a really nice car and have no gas in it? Like, it's like that. Like, your impression can look nice, but if it's not functional, it's just not functional. The things that George Bush has done, especially when it comes to the deregulation and why we had the financial crisis and reallocating money and then going to war and spending money, those things, I don't think you can get credit for handing some kid a lollipop. It's like Reagan giving out free government cheese after he starved everybody. I mean, I can't, you know what I mean? Like, there are some good and bad in everything. But I think you can I don't think that we can pat one on the back without pointing out what's going on the other hand.
And Jay, we don't know where that money went in Africa. It could have went to bribe leaders.
There's
a reason African infrastructure is so broke down, because Europeans keep coming in, divide and conquer, hey, we're going to give you a palace, but we want you to support this policy. There's a reason Africa keeps being divided. And so, yeah, the money, the foreign aid went there, but where did it go? Did it go to dominant leaders? Where did the money go? Did it go to dictators? We don't know where the
America
money went.
South America is a prime example of this, right? And the democracies that they had in South America, the United States bet against the democracies because the dictators gave more control to the U.S., right? So they needed to control those countries, that El Salvador's and San Salvador stuff. They controlled that because the democracies does not benefit them. It's just like with Chavez, with Venezuela. They have elections. They elected Chavez. That's a democracy. They elected him. Now, we don't like his policies, so we hate him, so we keep trying to back the opposition every time. And when the opposition does not win, we have issues with them, but they have a democracy. What are you going to do? Say you want a democracy or not, but don't, you know, you kind of are confusing the people when you just start hating people and giving aid to one side and not the other just to create allies. I can't give you credit for that. I know that that's strategic.
Yeah. You know, now during the, we talked about it earlier today, you know, you heard the name Cheney, and a lot of people think that Cheney was really behind a lot of some of the nonsense that was going on during the Bush presidency, and a lot of people who are close to the former president is saying that he realized that Dick Cheney really, there were some things that Dick Cheney did that was unethical, and he felt that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Cheney wasn't operating in good faith. So the relationship between the former president and the former vice president has been frosty, to say the least. But during his dedication at his presidential library, here are some of the comments that President Bush made about Dick Cheney.
I welcome members of my cabinet, the White House staff and administration, especially Vice President Dick Cheney. From the day I asked Dick to run with me, he served with loyalty, principle, and strength. Proud to call you friend.
Well, you know, he made the point to point him out, Mr. Elias, proud to call him friend. Now, there are a couple of things that he said in that statement that I thought that we need to call him out on. First of all, he didn't ask Dick Cheney to run. He asked Dick Cheney to find him a vice president, and eventually Dick Cheney found himself and said, hey, listen, let me be the one. And then another problem that we have with that relationship, and especially this is where it really went south, is that, you know, Scooter Libby, you know, Dick Cheney wanted President Bush to pardon him, and President Bush refused to do that. And that's something, Mr. Elias, that Dick Cheney has not forgiven the former president for.
And he's not going to forgive him. He said it. And you know, if you watch the documentary, that, you know, it's like leaving one of your men out there in the field to die. Now, you're mad at this man, you know, for not forgiving your, for not giving your main man a presidential pardon, but you're not mad at your damn self to send all these kids in the war to die. You know, it's like I said, what a hypocritical bastard he is. And I, you know, and I could care less about Dick Cheney. You know, he was an ass, and he's still an ass, you know?
Well, let me ask this question, and maybe this should have been the third topic instead of the second. Let me ask this question here, and then we have to wrap it up, and I'll ask each of you. Should the United States of America expedite these guys and let them face the music for war crimes? I mean, we do this for everyone else. Why? Because it's the fact that they're presidents, and I know the answer to this question, but I just want to make it a, you know, fodder of conversation. So, Steve, let me go to you first. Should the United States say, listen, take them. We'll have them shipped to you. You try them because they've committed war crimes. Well, should we do this?
Yeah, but what about the war crimes against Libya? Gaddafi from President Barack Obama. You see, this is the thing. When it comes to party, people, oh, man, it's like my father handing out DVDs about 9/11. People get very passionate when something supports their party. But when I point out that, hey, Bill Clinton may need to come up on war crimes, NATO may need to come up on war crimes, then things get itchy because it affects their political party. That's the thing. Absolutely, these guys should face war crimes. Man, there's so many people in this nation that need to face war crimes. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, Reagan. I mean, a lot of people did a lot of tearing up around the world that need to face war crimes. They're still alive to this day. Are they? Absolutely not. Because they're not going to set the precedent that, you know, you can do what needs, you can do what the corporate elite wants you to do, and you're going to face punishment for it. No, they're not going to set that precedent. They want to set the precedent that, hey, we'll send them in, tear it up, and we'll send Wall Street back in to build them up. That's what they're doing in Libya now. Wall Street's going in there, buying up stuff. And so like, be, you know, when we try to target a political party leader, like Bush, Republican Party, just know the same thing that applies to the Bush applies to other presidents as well from the Democrat Party. And that's my comment on that.
All right, let me go to you, Dr. Prince. Do you think these two men should be handed over to foreign countries so they can face trials, face trials against war crimes? What do you think?
Well, if I was in that decision making in another country, politically, it is politically correct that they should. Because it was definite error, and they came in and did to other people like other people came and they've done to us. And we sought to, not revenge, but we sought justice in the manner of, well, we brought them to death. because they continued in their efforts of demise. But I would say that they should, justice should be handled, and the other countries deserve it. Whatever that is, then that is what it is. I mean, whatever justice is for them, and where they can feel like they have received justice, I believe that that is fair to say that that should happen.
Okay. All right, Jerome, what do you think? You think these guys should be turned over and face the music for the crimes that they committed according to some of these foreign countries?
Well, I think that if they travel to certain countries, they'll get turned over. Now, it'll be interesting in what we do. And so they might want to keep their butt in this country. But I'm not sure if I'd say I think the U.N. probably should do their own Truth and Reconciliation Commission and release that. But I can tell you what happened last time. You remember, Bush and those guys would not give money to the U.N. That is pretty much how the United States works, right? They didn't go along with what we said, so we had a coalition of the willing. Like every time we have bodies external to the U.S. make decisions, the United States effectively ignore them. So you want to talk about feeding hungry people. We stopped giving money to the U.N. a long time ago because they wouldn't go along with our policies. And then after we, you know, did Iraq and killed all these people, then we go back to the U.N. and say we're going to pay our dues now. We're back. We're a voting member. We're back. So no,
wow.
I don't know how that's going to work. But I don't think the U.S. I don't think the U.S. will give them up. But I think that, again, somebody needs to, and not in a documentary way, but they need to have some kind of reconciliation for those particular war crimes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think something should happen. Let me go to you, Ms. Elias. Do you think? I guess I know the answer to this question, but why don't you just tell everyone? Should they be sent, expedited to foreign countries to face the music as far as war crimes?
For all the lying that they did, man, yes. You know, they. I mean, Dick Cheney just, man, he lied, man. He outright lied so that we could go to war. So, hell yeah, turn them both over. Because if you're the president of the United States, why are you letting your vice president take the lead in this? Hell yeah, turn both of them over.
And that's the word from the one and only Mr. Elias. All right, folks, we're not done yet, though. We have more to talk about. Coming up next, we're going to talk about our missing children of color. Don't go anywhere, folks. It's time to really put a spotlight on this thing. It's the Serious Side. It's Sunday morning. We'll be right back.
This is a test.
As we jump into the second set with laughter, a hearty laughter from Tommy Styles. Welcome back in, folks. 347-850-1272.
A show for women, by women. Is your resident, not from the South, Mom Little Donna.
Good Sunday morning to you, folks, and welcome into the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Cafe.
Welcome back. You are tuning in to the True Purpose Development Show. Tonight, we...
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
good.
Well, if
and
the record speaks for itself, what does it say going into this second term?
It's embarrassing as hell. We've been through all this with Mitt Romney, and we were very hard on Mitt Romney with his women bind and a variety of things. And I kind of think there's no excuse when it's the second term. If it's the first term, you can say people got to know who is around that's qualified in order to get this job, number one. I had thought, and maybe it's so, that it could be the Harvard problem, where people just know each other, trust each other, and women and minorities don't get a chance to rub elbows, and their reputations and experiences not known. But whatever it is, when you do have minorities who understand the problem, as Colin Powell oftentimes spoken out, is people not knowing the talent that women and minorities have. And if you don't know it, then you don't use it. So he's had 4 years to work the bench, to work the second team, so that in the second term, these people should be just as experienced as anybody, any other American.
23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to The Serious Side of the Jay Rouse Show. Happens every Sunday morning right here on the TJRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. The phone number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. That was Charlie Rango, and that really doesn't have nothing to do with what we're about to talk about, obviously. We played the wrong clip. But let's say good morning to everyone one more time. I'm like, God, what the hell is that? Let's say good morning to Steve in Minneapolis. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. Jay, don't feel bad. You're human.
Live radio, what can you say, right? Jerome Esprit, the most perfect man on the face of this planet. He doesn't make mistakes on radio. Good morning, Jerome. How are you?
Good morning. We all make mistakes.
And, of course, the one that really doesn't make mistakes and the one that has forgiven me for making that mistake, good morning to Dr. Princess Adeyo, the Queen of Inspiration. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning.
And I'm forgiven. Thank you. And of course, the man who's really going to chew, the man who's really going to chew my butt after the show, the one and only Mr. Elias. Mr. Elias, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, folks, listen, we're having a little fun this morning, but I tell you what, there's a topic that it's really no laughing matter, something that we've been promoting a lot here on the Jay Rouse Show and on the TGRS Radio Network and now on the Sirius side, because I think it's an issue that we really need to pay more attention to, and that's missing children of color. Now, every year, over 800,000 children are reported missing in this country. Every year, out of that 800,000, 125,000 approximately are children of color, virtually with no media coverage at all. So this morning, what I would like to do, I want to play a clip, a very short clip, from a internet show called HuffPost Live. For those who may be fans of the Huffington Post, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm going to play a little bit of this clip, and then I want us to comment, because there are some facts in there that I think we need to hear, and we'll definitely get back on this conversation when we return. So here's HuffPost Live. You can always go to HuffingtonPost.com to get the full extent of the interview, but they're talking to one of the editors of Jet Magazine this past month, decided to dedicate a whole issue on missing children of color. Here's the clip, and we'll talk on the other side.
Hey, you're watching HuffPost Live. I'm Mark Lamont Hill. Every year, about 800,000 children under the age of 18 are reported missing. 150,000 of those kids, that's nearly 20%, are black. Yet these missing black youth rarely make the headlines. This week, they are the cover story in Jet Magazine, though, joining us to discuss African-American children missing in action. Where's the outrage? Where's the question? Is Derica Wilson. Derica Wilson. She is co-founder and president of the Black and Missing Foundation. We also have Jamie Floyd, a legal and political analyst. We're joined by Dr. Jeff Gardier, a psychologist. And we're joined by Larry and Lorraine Stackhouse, whose son, Larry Stackhouse Jr., went missing in 2005. And last and certainly not least, we're joined in studio by Missy Miller. She's editor-in-chief of Jet Magazine. First of all, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mark. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm excited that we're doing this segment, that we're having this conversation, and then more importantly, that you all put this on the cover.
No, absolutely. You know, and when you said the 20%, I think that's probably even a conservative number. The FBI has it as 33.8%,
wow.
You know. So this is a national epidemic, but the reason that we decided to put it on our cover is because I feel, and
jobs in publishing fields and jet fields, like our community needs to pay attention. It's not just happening to other people. This is happening to us. Our children are disappearing at the rate of 17 per hour. Not
17 per hour.
17 per hour. Someone is going missing. These are our loved ones. These are our future. So we need to pay attention. We need to be talking about it.
And the decision to make this, and this is a great cover story here, the decision to make this a cover story is so important. I see this fade to black. And essentially, the only thing worse than knowing that your child has vanished is accepting that your loss is not a priority to those in a position to help. I look at those faces of these children. They should be an urgent priority for all of us, but somehow there's a sense that when black children are missing, they're not a priority. Why is that?
You know, it's about organizing, and it's about making sure we get our stories out, and it's about the people in power, in the position of power making decisions, making the priority what matters to them. Unfortunately, minorities aren't always in the positions that they can make those decisions. So we have to kind of go through a grassroots effort. We have to work from within to get the news out.
Absolutely. Derica, good to see you as always. Talk to me about some of the reasons why black children don't get the priority, because it seems to me that many law enforcement agencies even convince themselves that they're operating in good faith. I don't think they say, oh, black children, we don't care. It seems to be much more complicated and nuanced than that. Talk to me about some of the factors that make black children harder to locate.
Well, one of the problems that we've actually seen is that when our children go missing, some of the police departments are not even actually taking the police reports. So in order for us to even get involved, there must be a police report on file. And when we follow up, you know, one of the excuses that we get is that, you know, your child is a runaway, they'll come back soon, or they associate our children and adults as criminals. And so they don't feel that those stories are sensational enough. So it's not just the law enforcement piece of it, it's also some of the media outlets as well.
I'm glad you made that point, and this is a point that I want to hit home again, because I want to make sure people don't understand the distinction here. A child is missing. You call law enforcement and you say, my child is missing. The first reaction for some children is, let's go try to find them. The distinction is black children aren't even marked as missing. They're actually marked as runaways. The assumption is that they're not missing. Not that someone took them, not that there was foul play. The assumption is that they ran away or they are caught up in some kind of crime. So they're further criminalized even when they're missing.
Exactly. And we all know that runaways do not receive the Amber Alert. And so there's no sense of urgency to even find our children, when in actuality, we have bigger issues right here on U.S. soil. For example, human trafficking. A lot of our children are missing because of human trafficking. Some of them are just abducted, kidnapped. They're not all associated with criminal activity, and a lot of them have very good backgrounds, but we need to have this information out there. You know, for example, we had a young lady that was missing for 5.5 months. No one was interested. The police didn't even take the police report initially, and after being missing for 5.5 months, it took 15 minutes after a segment aired on national television for a tip to come in. This child wasn't a runaway. This child was caught up in a world that she had no clue about.
You know, that was from HuffPost Live. I really recommend that you go to the site. And I tell you what, just some of the statistics alone that were said during that piece, I wanted people to hear that. 17 missing per minute. We have to talk about this, folks. We have to get serious about it. So we're going to do it this morning. Jerome, let me start off with you. I mean, why is it that African-American kids, children of color, really and truly don't get the media coverage that is so well-deserved?
Well, if I can talk about racism and oppression for a minute, I'll give you a really good explanation for that. Initially on the topic, I had, you know, didn't think I was going to have anything to say until in that HuffPost piece, they mentioned Larry Stackhouse Jr. I actually am friends with Larry Stackhouse Sr. I know him well, went to high school with him, and wow, known him since probably grammar school. And I can tell you that what happens is that the police department or anybody, as far as government, whether they're politicians or police or any organization, they don't put stock when black people are missing. I mean, when seriously, if someone white came in and said, hey, we have somebody missing, they've been missing for 5 hours, they will go out and look for them. There was one case that was very near to where Larry Stackhouse Jr. was missing, and they caught the guy. I mean, the guy killed her. But some suburban white female, they called the police, said that she's missing. She was home for college. We haven't seen her. And they got out right away to look for the girl. And they caught the guy probably a day or two later. But they do treat black kids like they're just runaways. It's like, well, what was your relationship like with them? Like, they start asking you those kind of questions without understanding that you probably know your child well enough than to call the police when you think that they just left home for because they're mad. So, yeah, I think it's I don't really know what to say about it generally, but we don't put the resources in black missing children. This is why in politics I always say that black people need to stop being so hard on black folks when they get in political positions, because it's hard to change a system, right? If you don't have enough people in the systems that care about people who look like them, you're never going to have any kind of response for even things like missing children.
You know, and that's interesting you bring that up, because the bottom line is that, you know, we've always talked about this on different periods on this network. We talked about how, you know, you can reel off three names of missing white children in the last 10 years. But I challenge everyone, give me five. You know, give me three, give me two, you know, and some people may be able to do that because they listen to the show. They listen to the show. But the bottom line is, Steve, we really and truly don't know these missing children, and they really and truly don't get the type of media coverage that their white counterparts get. And let me say this before we even continue any further. We've always said this. Any child that goes missing, it's just a crime and it hurts. I mean, listen, I'm a parent, and I know if I had gotten a phone call, or if I get a phone call from a police officer saying that, you know, we can't find your child or whatever the case may be, I'd be devastated. So I don't wish that pain on any parent, but we have to call a spade a spade. And the bottom line is that we do not get the media coverage that we need to find our own. You heard what Dorica said during that piece. I interviewed her a few years ago. She's the CEO of Black and Missing, and she talked about how that kid had been missing for, what, 5 days or 5 weeks. They aired something on television. They got a tip. Now, I'm not sure if they, you know, they found the kid, but the bottom line is, as soon as it aired, someone called in. Your thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, it's very tragic. I was looking at that, though. MissingKids.com, more than 58,000 children were abducted by non-family members. More than 200,000 children were abducted by family members. And I can see that happening, especially with the custody battles and stuff like that. But we live in a nation of a lot of pedophiles, man. 80 million child pornography images since 2002. This is a very pedophile, sick culture out here, Jay. And child prostitution, 1,000% increase from 2004 to 2008. It's a tragedy. In the media, to be honest with you, Jay, I don't expect white media to give a damn about black people. I don't, because we don't own and control that infrastructure. I don't expect them to hardly do anything for black folks. I really don't. Because, you know, we just don't control it. We don't have any say-so over it. And I don't expect anything from it. I just really don't. And I agree with you that we don't get the media attention. Even my own family members were talking about this issue. My mom, about the media that doesn't say hardly anything about the missing black children. But, oh, let a white girl go missing. Oh, man. They got missing white girl syndrome. You know, oh, man. Now, the Navy might even be sent out for her. You know, there was a situation where they sent the Navy to go looking for a girl. You know, so don't let a missing white girl go missing, because that missing white girl syndrome starts coming out. And boy, he'll be all over the news about that missing white girl.
But let me ask you this, Steve, and you know, and anyone can definitely chime in on this. Let me have a follow up with you, and we definitely want to hear from Mr. Elias and Dr. Princess Adia. But here's my follow up to that. That's comment that you just made. Is it a situation where, you know, people are used to dealing with people who look like them? I mean, listen, when I go frequent different different places and do those types of things. I hang out with people who look like me. I'm not a racist. I mean, some of my best friends are white, you know, and, you know, they tell you when someone says that they usually are racist. But I'm serious. I mean, the bottom line is that, I mean, you know, there's a woman that I adore so much. If anything, I would give my life for this woman. She, you know, she's not the same color as I. Is it a situation where we're just so used to dealing with our own and we're not doing this intentionally? It's just the way we are wired. I mean, we are going to congregate around people who look like us and do those types of things. Look at this show. I mean, look at what we do here on the TGRS Radio Network. I mean, we're not, you know, doing anything for, you know, we don't put white kids up. Well, we don't do that because obviously we feel that they get enough media attention and we need to reach out and play a small role in this whole thing. But how about it, Steve? I mean, is it a situation where, you know, listen, we're creatures of habit. We're not racist. You know, it's just not something that we think about.
Yeah, little Jay, I mean, you know, I can't give a pass towards that situation because we know the executives of these corporations that run the media, the CNN, Fox News, what have you, your local TV station, they determine what gets air coverage and what doesn't get air coverage. An executive making over six figures, is he really going to be concerned about missing black children? I doubt it. And because of the fact that, you know, hey, he may not, I know the media gets thousands of stories all the time, and they have to pick what gets played, what don't get played, but at the end of the day, when was the last time we seen a missing black child all over national media? Name me, I can't even remember. I'll probably have to go research the archives to find the last time there was a national news story about a missing black child.
Was it Felicia Barnes?
I mean,
was it Felicia Barnes, a young lady out of Baltimore? I'm not sure if it was a national story, but if you have access to the internet, you mean you saw a lot of it. And I think I did see something, but I don't think it was. Yeah, but I don't think it. Yeah, but it didn't get the type of play of a Natalie Hardaway or a JonBenet Ramsey. And I get what Steve is saying. I mean, the bottom line is it really and truly doesn't get that type of play. And it, or if it's a child, and you know, listen, and I don't. I'm trying to figure out a politically correct way to say this because I don't want to offend anyone. But if it's a very dark skinned young lady who's not that very attractive, no one's going to talk about it because it just seems to me, Ms. Delias, that regardless of what the situation is, beauty and appearance sells. You know, it's been proven in job interviews. It's proven by, you know, people. I mean, you know, when you go after, when you try to find a young lady, you're going to try to look for the best looking young lady in the bunch. That's just the way we are wired. So why would it be any different when we're talking about missing children? If your child is not very attractive, they don't want that sprued all over the television screens, do they, Mr. Elias?
No, when it becomes so desensitized that we cannot put it in the face that a child is missing. I don't give a damn how that child looks. And, you know, when we become that desensitized about and put it in the media, when we sit there and we say, is it a case where we're used to doing, and the child don't look like us and all of that? Hey, it's a child, first and foremost. It's a child that's missing. It's a child that needs his mother or his father. It's a child that's being abused. It's a child that's not there anymore. The bottom line is it's a child. And that's the point that we're missing and that the media is missing. A child is missing. That's the most important thing in the world to a parent is their child. And it's missing. And for us to just sit there and act like, oh, because it doesn't look like this, it doesn't have, it's a child of color, it's wrong. And it's going to always continue to be wrong. We need media coverage on every child that is missing. There needs to be a station on a child that is missing. And we always, on every news, there should be at least 10 to 15 children on every newscast that where we play all this bull crap about the next thing that's happening on a soap opera or the next thing that's happening on mainstream media. There needs to be a child put there. Why can't that happen? This is the question that needs to be answered.
What about you, Dr. Priscilla? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I have so much to say. I'm sitting here thinking as I'm listening to everybody's comments.
I'm going to be devil's advocate for a moment because I just cannot. I'm finding it very hard to believe that just as a result of race that we don't get coverage across the board. And I know it, and there has been cases that will prove that to be so. But I'm saying from an overall perspective all the time, I'm just finding it hard to, That's so malicious. So what I'm going to ask is this. Is it a case, and a question maybe we can ask ourselves, is it a case that when we have, in many cases, we've had black children that have been missing in urban communities, and is it a case that they're not paying attention, or has it been, in many cases, maybe a wolf cry where it was just the child decided they were moving out to go to a friend's house or whatever because it was too whatever at home or whatever, and then they come back and it's no big deal. And the reason I say that, I have a niece who lives in the inner city, and she's run away quite a few times, and all because she thought her mom didn't listen to her or whatever, and she made that decision to move, you know, to run away. When my sister calls the cops, now she resides in Detroit, and you know Detroit is inundated with crime, and there are other things that they can be covering, and they do cover it. I can't say that they're always talking about missing children on the news, but I will say this, that the news and the police are occupied with major crimes, etc. When my sister reported her niece missing, they found my niece, they got my niece, and it was within a day. I'm wondering if there is a situation where maybe the cases are resolved in many cases. Is it a case where some of the parents are absent and not making a big stink about it themselves? The case in Baltimore, I forgot her name just that quick, but you said it earlier, Jay, and Theo covered it. You covered it heavily on his segment, and we covered it here, et cetera. That did go national, and that was a big deal. But guess who made it a big deal? The parents made it a huge deal, and they sent the dogs out on that situation. So I would love to look statistically more at what we are analyzing when we come with that conclusion. I mean, what are the scenarios? The scenarios of the community, of the news. Okay.
Are you being serious?
I already know what you're going to say.
Okay, well, let's do this. So a very good friend of the program. I mean, she's just like, she might as well say she's on the show. Miss Terry, she is the... I want to say she's the CEO, but I guess she can tell us her official title with peas in her pod. Good morning, Ms. Terry. Welcome to the Serious Time. How are you?
I'm great. Actually, I'm a researcher. Hi.
Okay.
I research. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I research missing kids and adults.
Okay.
Thank you. I want to hear from what Ms. Terry has to say, because I'm curious.
We definitely want to hear from her. Yeah, go ahead, Ms. Terry. The floor is yours.
And one thing I wanted to say is don't expect, when you do have a missing child, I'm going to go back a minute. Felicia Barnes was almost national, but she didn't quite hit national as some of the Caucasian kids did.
You're right.
And that's probably the only child that closely came national. She didn't hit national.
Right.
When you have a missing child, don't expect the police to look for your child. That's the one thing. You call, you get a report. You get a missing child report, but you as a parent are going to have to do the legwork because they're not going to do the legwork for you.
Absolutely.
They're just not going to do it.
That's
kind of on, you know, I mean, I'm talking about missing kids and missing kids of color. That's Asian, that's Spanish, that's all of them. They're not going to go out. They don't have the manpower, quote unquote, to go out. You have to go out. You have to call the police. You have to stay on their asses. You have to do the main part of the work, because a lot of parents think, I'm going to call, and they're going out to find my kids. No, they make a report. It sits there, and that's all it does. So most of the time, it doesn't even hit media. I have to go to media me as an advocate, not getting paid a dime. I have to make a flyer and go to media and hit them with it constantly for them to even feel like wanting to put it up.
But can I ask this question? The officers or the places that you go, are you going to tell me that the decision makers there, they're all, you know, they're not black, they're all Caucasian, et cetera? I think it's just, I think we have to consider more things than just this race card thing as an issue, as the only issue. Like, that's why. Maybe it's our system. Maybe it's our
system. Let me tell you, here in Sacramento, there's a lot of African American on the newscasters. I've been doing this for years. I only met one lady that would help me put flyers out or even was concerned about African-American missing kids. We have other African-American newscasters that don't mention it either. I mean, we got to look at us. We got to look at what we are not
exactly.
doing. We can't blame everybody else. We need to look at us. You know, BET, you know, all these places. Jet finally hit it. Finally, they've been putting a girl in a bikini mm-hmm. in the middle of this book for how many years?
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So we need to look within
Absolutely.
Us.
So
Absolutely. Jay is doing a service for us now. And if we all did some type of service for us, we would get somewhere. We cannot expect other people to take care of us. That's not going to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
My question would be, what media do we control, though?
What can we do in media?
Yeah, I mean, what media do we control? What media outlets do we have control of so that we can put forth an effort to do any of these things?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
BET has never, to me, been, you know, a black media outlet for me because it's like buffoonery. It has been. I mean, even when they had Tavis Smiley on there and he was doing the nightly news and then they got rid of it. And I don't know. I got to tend to agree with Steve when it says that when he says we need to control media. Whenever we control media...
Mm-hmm.
It would probably be a lot better, but we don't control any media.
Right. And we don't have that control. So we have to do it, you know, Bazin. Is that his name, Michael Bazin?
Yeah,
Michael Bazin. But he used to do Black and Missing Children. Now he's not on. So,
right.
But he
and
did do Black and Missing Children.
And I think TV1 has something that they do as well. Find our missing or something along
mm-hmm.
those lines. And that's why I think it's important for us, you know, those who have a voice, and trust me, we have a very small voice, but I, you know, listen, if one person hears about this, I think mission accomplished, because that's one less person that knew about it the day prior. But I think I want to go back. I'm not trying to start anything, but I'm trying to understand. Dr. Princess O'Dea, when you make comments saying that, you know, when we say that there is a disparity in coverage, and you're saying that you really don't see proof of that, I mean, I find that very hard to believe.
What? No, I find that hard to believe for you to even make a comment like that. Jay, no, what I said was we talk about isolated incidences. I'm talking about an overall conclusion that we draw. I said that I believe that we need to dig a little deeper into our conclusions as to why the conclusion is the way it is. And I believe that Ms. Perry touched on it very clearly. And she said that we have to change some things in our own infrastructure. And I believe that 100%. That's exactly where I was going with that. So, no, I understand that that is the case in many cases. I understand that. But I am saying why I'm asking the question and taking the devil's advocate approach, if you would, and really just a true approach. Why is that? Let's look at the whole picture. I think a lot of times we're guilty of stopping at, oh, well, the numbers say that the black are less reviews than the white. Okay.
You
and
don't
then
need
we
the
run
numbers.
With that.
You,
and
you
we,
I tell you what, do me a favor right
so
now. You don't need, listen,
that.
You don't
Why?
Need the numbers.
Why?
You don't need the numbers because the bottom line is that if I ask anyone, on this panel this morning to name three white missing children.
Ms. Terry, I understand that, but
you don't need numbers, Dr. Prince, though, do you, to realize this. And this is the thing that bothers me about this. You don't need numbers. You can't name five missing African American kids right now. You can't do it.
I can't name five of any color.
You may not even have a television, but that's a different topic for a different day. But I'm talking about the average person. The average person cannot. Steve, let me ask you something, Steve. Give me real quick three names of missing white kids.
Jay, I'm on Fox News' website right now. Missing girl. And guess what? On Fox News' website, when you type in missing girl, they are white girls all day long. Here it is. Okay, May 2012, you got Rachel White. You got all these white girls. I'm on the Fox News' website right now. I don't see black girls anywhere, period.
Right.
And come on Fox News' website if you want to challenge that, because I'm on there right now. They got a video section of all these little videos of missing Arizona girl, Colorado girl. They're all white.
You're not going to find any. You're not going to find any.
Exactly. So Jay is right. And like I said, do you expect a six-figure corporate media executive? Okay, I just found one. Black girl, missing 5-year-old girl in Arizona. There seem to be a lot of girls missing in Arizona. I don't know what's going on with Arizona.
Well, and like we said before, Jerome, you know, the bottom line is we don't want any child to go missing. But it just seems to me that this is an issue. And the thing for me is, you know, we do a segment now called Have You Seen Me? And we're going to do that. You know, as long as the TGR's radio network is doing what it's doing, because I just think that we have to be more involved in this. We have to, you know, those of us who have a voice, we have
and
to
I
say
have
something.
To. I'm going to get more
you know,
involved.
And the bottom line is that, hey, it may take you a few minutes to do. Matter of fact, one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to produce a video so I can have that posted on social media websites. You know, it takes a while to do the movie part of it because there's a little bit of editing involved with that. But the bottom line, Jerome, is that those of us who have voices, those of us who come on the air, we have to start acknowledging this, because if we don't do it, how can we sit here and criticize other media outlets for doing it, and we're not even taking care of business? Your thoughts?
And you know, that's why I started it's a couple of reasons why I started a news service anyway, and I published SolaSyracuse.com, and about 3 weeks ago, someone sent me a missing person, a black male out of Atlanta area. And we posted immediately. I'm not saying that we had anything to do with the child being found, but the child was found probably 2 weeks later. It is our job especially as black media and those of us who do the news, is to kind of speak out, because the problem is when we start focusing our interest on other communities and not ourselves, our community goes lacking. And so I know a lot of people have issues with this by saying, you know, they don't want to seem like they're favoring black people, but what community are you from? Like, and I don't understand why you don't have any compassion for your own community, but have compassion for everybody else. Now, humanity says that we have compassion for everybody, because we do. But time after time, and this goes back a long ways, that spiritually black folks do care about everybody. That's why during the 60s, when they were integrating schools, there was never any footage about white kids getting beat up at black schools when they did integration. All of that footage is white kids or black students at white schools. There's a reason for that, because media would have blew that out of the water if one white kid would have got harmed. So we skew things on the media side, and then we ask these questions. Right? Nobody's talking about, we did talk about John King saying about the bomber, a dark-skinned black male. They demonize black people so much in society on media that when black children are missing, there is no compassion there. It's further demonization of black people, especially dark-skinned black people at that.
Exactly. That's what I mentioned earlier, Miss Daly, is the fact that if you don't have this, even cute light-skinned kids, you know, bottom line is that they get more media coverage, as far as I'm concerned, than a sister that's not very attractive. And it's just the way we're built. That's our DNA. We gravitate to beauty. I mean, that's something that we do, regardless of what the subject matter is. That's just the way it is. But, getting back on this topic, though, I remember when I was at home a few years ago, and there were these posters out at White Castle, one of my favorite places to hang out. I'm sorry, and I saw this poster, and I was like, "Wow, really?" And you said, "Man, these kids have been missing for a very long time." I said, "I had never heard of these children, and to this day, I still have not heard of these children." And Mr. Elias, man, I mean, the bottom line is that what can we do? What can a person at home listening to you right now ask you for advice as far as what do they need to do to contribute to the conversation? What would be your response?
Write your local media. Write your local media. Put heat on their ass, man, and see what you can come up with. Maybe if enough people speak up and enough people try and put this topic out to your local media, maybe they'll spend a little time with missing children. Every year, I'd say in June or July, it's two black children missing, have been missed for the last 10, 15 years, that the local media says something about. But, I mean, it's depressing. It's disheartening to know that a child is missing and can't get home to their mother or their father. It's just disheartening to me.
It really and truly is. And you know what, Miss Terry, one of the things you said, I definitely want to highlight this point, because I think that, in fairness to Natalie Holloway, bottom line is that her mother made sure, even though she was invited to a lot of these places,
mm-hmm.
but, she made sure that she did everything in her power to make sure that her daughter's information and her daughter's story was in the forefront. I mean, she traveled to Aruba on many occasions. You talked about
mm-hmm.
this. There are parents who don't have resources, but you also mentioned, parents need to step up their game. So for parents out there who really don't have the money and the savings, because how our people are, a lot of our people, we live from paycheck to paycheck. Let's just keep it real.
Mm-hmm.
So how can a parent that really don't have the means to, travel to, different places to do these types of things, what would be your advice to them as far as keeping their daughters or missing children's story alive?
Well, the first thing is making them a page on Facebook. Making them a page on Facebook is free. You put all their pictures out and all their information out. That's one thing that I see a lot of parents doing that's getting out there. They're keeping their kids alive. Walking the streets, putting flyers up, and trying to get your church involved. Now, let's go that direction. How many churches do you know in your area that don't even show you missing kids? I mean,
wow.
Put them on a certain wall in the church and say, these kids are missing. It's very simple, but they don't do it.
Wow.
Us black people are walking in the church, and we don't know. You know what I'm saying? We don't know. And a lot of times I've talked to parents that, well, I don't, because I show a lot of missing kids. Well, I don't want to see that because, my kids are covered by the blood, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but there's a lot of kids missing that. Their parents are Christian. They've been praying. So stop all that. You know what I'm saying? There's so many, all these, the smoke and mirrors with people. They don't get it. I've talked to one mother. I had to go to her house and get her out of bed because she was depressed because her daughter was missing. Get up, because you need to be the voice for your child. You need to be that voice. So, I get really heated with it because I see parents that don't want to do nothing. They just want to hand you their parents, their kid's name and say, do something, and just sit there. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, if you're not out trying to
mm-mm.
do the work, then why would you think someone else would do it,
no.
regardless of whether it's their
no.
responsibility or not? That's a good point.
No.
Excellent point, though, about the churches. I know how you feel about, you know, church folk with LES. Bottom line is that we spend all this money, all these pastors flying around in helicopters and doing all these other things, but you can't dedicate a portion of your program or you know, put out something in the church announcements, church program about missing black kids. You know, it seems to me that they should feature at least one or two every service. I can't understand why they can't do that, but yet still they have these 15,000 offerings trying for the building fund and all this other nonsense. Why can't you do that? Why does it have to be all about money? You're right. We need to take care of our own. We have some of the biggest mega churches in this country, and yet still you don't hear any of these people talk about this.
Absolutely.
You know, you have gotten me riled up because I didn't even think about that, Miss Terry. That's ridiculous.
Yes. I've contacted Jamal Bryant. I've contacted TDJ. I'm serious. I'll be seriously on them because it makes no sense. You're on TV. Post one. It makes no sense to me.
Wow.
None. It doesn't make any sense.
Unbelievable.
Yes,
Dr.
But do you see what I'm saying? But do you see what I'm saying? I said, let's look at us first. We're always taking the opportunity to point the finger, and when we do that, you negate the opportunity to realize what area you need to change.
Well,
you
asked me a question, and let me answer that question. No, I don't see what you're saying because, you know, T.D. Jakes don't own CNN. You know, T.D. Jakes don't own ABC News.
But he's televised all over the world.
That's fine.
Come on. Okay.
That's fine.
Okay, but we're not talking about which media coverage they're going to get nationally or not. We're talking about it becoming.
Yes, we are.
So, no. We want to focus on the opportunity to point the finger. Let's focus on the opportunity.
We want to focus on getting the word out about our missing children.
Okay,
and so
TD
Jakes does not own ABC, does not own CBS.
Okay, fine.
You could probably walk up to five white people, and they don't know who he is. But if you ask them who Diane Sawyer is or Nancy Grace, they'll tell you.
But guess where most of our people are. They're all in the church, okay? And there are a whole lot of people in the church from all different cultures and around the world. We, like you said, what we need to do, let's talk about the solution now, okay? So the solution, yeah, you're right. I'm so glad, Ms. Terry, that you are reaching out to the mega churches and causing for even the local churches to step up their game and also for us to step up our game. I know I'm going to bring it big time on the True Purpose Development Show, too, and as we simulcast here on this network. So we have to talk about what we're doing to bring a change. And let that be the focus. Let's talk about the solution at this point.
All right. Okay, listen here. We need to let me give everyone a final word on this, and because we definitely have to move on. We have to finish up the show. So, Steve, give me a final word on this particular topic, missing African-American children.
I also blame law enforcement as well because of the fact that they can set up sting operations. You know, they can have children walking around in parks and different areas, you know, where it's known, that's known for abductions and molestation, and set up more sting operations and get these guys off the street, you know. And a lot of these, they're on that sexual predator list, but they're not, they change, their address changes and it's not updated. I mean, so there's law enforcement gaps in the hole there as well, and the states are broke. So, you know, I even heard in Los Angeles, there's certain domestic phone calls they don't really care about. You know, their budget is limited. They you call them, or my husband's beating me, they may not come. So, you know, it's there's an issue there as well. That's my final comment on that.
All right, what about you, Jerome? Give me a final thought on this particular topic, sir.
Well, I think you guys already hit it on the head. We need to do more to kind of press those people who have the access to media to do more advocacy. And we just kind of all need to do our part, but it's not our fault. It is the fact that we know through oppression that they're not looking out for our interests, and I mean that by media, and you have to feed media. They do not do homework. They don't do homework in politics. They will not do homework here. So you have to put that stuff together and actually keep banging on the door. It is our responsibility as citizens to press them. If you're watching TV, you should send them a letter and tell them, I don't see any black kids on here. So we need to press them as well and be our own advocates.
That's a great, great point. All right, Dr. Prince, though, do you give me your final word on this?
Well, my final word is, I think I kind of just said it, but I will reiterate, we need to start making a difference within our own community and stop focusing our attention on what somebody else is not doing for us, okay? As Ms. Cherry has noted, there are parents that are asleep. There are people that are not using the social media stream. There are people, and we are known for this, we'll pass the buck, take the flyer to the police station and say, do it, and not think that we have to pick up our fingers and talk about what they didn't do. We are guilt. A lot of us are guilty of that. This is true. So I think it's very important for us to pay attention and for us to take responsibility of implementing change and a contribution to this cause.
Okay. All right, Mr. Elias, what about you?
You know, some man, I think we all need to become advocates. I think we all need to be passionate about missing children. I think we all need to sit down and write letters to the different media outlets, to our local preachers, our mainstream preachers, and let them know, hey, we're not going to support you if you don't hear our calls. And we just pull back the dollar. A lot of people are listening, and then they'll come on with you.
Yeah. And, Ms. Terry, I'm going to give you the final word on this set. Your thoughts.
My final word is missing or runaway. It should only be missing. Because if your child hasn't came home, and if you don't know where your child is, your child is missing. Your child is not a runaway. So we need to, you know, mark that off and always use missing. Second, and this is probably going to be another show, African American men never hit the media. You will not find a African American myth never hit the media. That is absolutely, it really needs to be talked about. Because I have a lot of men that I put out, and no one ever knows who they are. So,
wow, I mean, and that's something, too. Wow, I mean, that's a whole other thing.
But you kids go to Peas in Their Pods, and they show Black and Missing. Black and Missing and Black and Missing and Never Forgotten. Those three places that show African-American missing kids and adults. And, you know, the adults don't get shown at all, too. When you get to a certain age, over 18, you really don't hear about them. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. And you're right. And we definitely need to do a better job of that as well. I mean, because you're right. Not only are young children of color missing, but we're also dealing with adults as well, and we need to get the word out. Folks, very passionate show, but we're not done. Coming up, before we go, Chatterbox and our final thoughts. Don't go anywhere, folks. The Serious Side rolls on, but the end is near on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best.
There is love. Harvey, signor Zanis, dal simile dove vai in quel paese.
The week that was in the news.
All right, folks, it is time for, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made headlines this past week. There's a couple out there I wanted to talk about. The first one I want to talk about is this situation that's going on with Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin is pissed off, Ms. Delias. She tweeted something last night. Let me read it. She says, look, she says, that WHCD, she was talking about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. This is what she wrote. That WHCD was pathetic. The rest of America is out there working their asses off while these D.C. ass clowns throw themselves a nerd party. Who the hell does this woman think she is, Miss Elias?
Well, she's the head of this Tea Party, man. That's who she is, man. She's a complete idiot. Because if she'd have been in Washington, D.C. as a vice president, her ass would have been right in there, sitting her ass right there alongside everybody else. So, as far as I'm concerned, she doesn't mean nothing.
Well, you know, but Jerome, is it a situation where, you know, she slowly but surely sees that she's becoming irrelevant now, and she's trying to figure out a way to, you know, keep her pockets greased by just saying idiotic stuff every now and then, especially after they fired her from Fox?
Well, she was there last year, for first of all. And secondly, she must have been watching it last night because the president said he had outreach that he was hanging out with Congress because they kept saying he was aloof. And he said he hung out with Michelle Bachmann and he went to a book burning that she had. So she's just pissed that he said that. It was a good joke. It was a great joke. So that's what she's mad about.
Oh, is she okay? See, I didn't see it. I got to go back and watch it on replay. Interesting. All right, listen, there's a story. Well, let me ask you, Steve, because, you know, that's politics. What do you think about Sarah Palin, man? Do you think she's irrelevant? Do you think, you know, she's talking about working her asses off. What exactly does she do? She quit her job as governor. So what is she doing? I mean, she's a professional speaker, a professional note writer on hands. What does she do, Steve?
She's trying to get as much media's attention as she can. I mean, that screams out the loudest. You know, the biggest mouths get the most media attention. So I think she's just writing books and just trying to keep her little campaign going. It is what it is. It's my comment.
Yeah. All right, Dr. Princess O'Dea, here's a story that you may dig. A radio host lost a bet and had to eat a live rat on radio.
What? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, this guy he kept his word. He there was a comment made by a soccer coach overseas saying that this player would be an impact player. He said, if that guy becomes an impact player, I'll eat a rat. Well, that guy became an impact player, and he ate the rat live on radio and the cameras on. So let me ask you something. If you lose a bet, can I get you to eat a rat if you lose a radio bet live? Would you go through it, or would you, you know, figure out a way to weasel out of it?
Absolutely not. First of all, I wouldn't even do such a bet, okay? Because this is what I will say. He kept his word. His word is bond. We could never say that he is not a man of his word, and that does go good for some type of coverage, anybody who would do such a thing. So I would not ever do that because I wouldn't even enter into such a bet.
All right, Ms. Elias, what about you, man? If you lost the bet, would you knock it down? Would you chug a leg it on down?
I have to, Jay, because I'm a man of my word, but I'm like Dr. Adidas. I'm not going to sit here and make a bet that I'm going to eat a rat.
All right, Jerome. Let me ask you. What about you, Jerome? Would you smack it down, or?
I know you're not asking me. You could have hit me on this one.
Say something that Jerome tried to say.
First of
That's
all,
funny.
I try not to say things I won't do, and I would not do that.
You're saying things like
chicken. Oh, my God. That was funny, Jerome. Wow. Hilarious. That was hilarious. Oh, my God. All right, the NBA playoffs are in full effect. Okay, now, you guys sticking with your picks. Now, I took the Knicks. I know people think I'm crazy, but I took the Knicks. Are you guys sticking with your original picks?
Absolutely. You know, Tyson Chandler is needed from the Knicks. You know, there's going to be a long series between Miami and New York, but I'm thinking that it's going to the Miami's going to come out on top, man, because James is unstoppable, man. He doesn't get tired. He rarely gets injured. I expect Wade to have some little injury problems, but LeBron pulls through. He's like a super, he's a mutant, according to Kobe Bryant. He's a mutant.
I know. You know, the Lakers are in trouble. And, you know, and I don't know what to say about that. They're gone. And Kobe's not going to get that championship that he thinks he's going to get. I think it's a done deal, so he can forget it.
Yeah, they're done. But, you know, Oklahoma with Brian Westbrook, man, that hurt bad.
Yeah, that did hurt him. Yeah. All right, folks, you know what time it is. It is time for Chatterbox, where we go in the chat room and we read some of the comments from the chat room. And I have one in here from Green Dog. He just showed up. He says, look, I agree with Palin. We are being punished, sequestered, and they're having expensive parties. Very poor judgment. Mr. Elias, who do you have, sir?
I got one from Easy Rider when he says, I can't wait till someone writes a book exposing Cheney even more than we know now.
Boy, that's a good one. I have another one here from, have one actually from Mariana Music. And she says, I agree with your comments, Jay. People do treat beautiful people differently. I have noticed this personally. Okay. Who else do you have, Mr. Elias?
I got Covina, man, when he says, Cheney was and still is Satan.
Boy, Dick Cheney can't catch a break. And I also have one in here from, that's it. I don't have anything else. All right. And that's Chatterbox, folks. Okay, coming up, our final thoughts after the news break. News, look, don't make me laugh. After the news update and another edition of Have You Seen Me? We'll be right back to finish up, folks. Don't go anywhere.
Sir, have you seen this girl?
Hello, friends. I'm Jay, the host of The Jay Rowell Show and the serious side of The Jay Rowell Show. And it's time for another edition of Have You Seen Me? Where we put the spotlight on missing children of color. In today's spotlight, I'd like to tell you about a young lady by the name of Breonna Walker. She's 17 years old. She's been missing since April 20th of this year from the city of Detroit. She's 5'3", she weighs 180 pounds, her hair is medium length, her eyes are brown. She was last seen leaving her home on Prevost near Outer Driver in Greenville around 6 p.m. It's Eastern Standard Time. She was last seen wearing a black and red sheer top and blue jeans. If you have any information on the whereabouts of Breonna Walker, you are asked to call the Detroit Police Department at 313-596-2069. That number once again is 313-596-2069. And as always, we pray for the safe return of this beautiful young lady, and we pray for her family. Folks, there are over 800,000 missing children of color. Can you name 10 of them? This is a huge problem. And people in the media should be ashamed of themselves for not focusing and bringing more attention to our missing children of color. If you know of a child that is missing and you would like for them to be featured on this segment, please contact us via email at thejrileshowatlive.com. That's thejrileshowatlive.com. Or you can go to our Facebook page, the TGRS Radio Network, and leave your information there, or you can contact me personally on Facebook. Just look up Jay Rowell. That's J-A-Y-R-I-L. I'm Jay Rowell. And until next time, you've been listening to Have You Seen Me on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. We pray for the safe return of all missing children, regardless of color. We'll see you back here next time. God bless. Take care.
Somewhere in America, a mother is crying.
A family is torn.
A child is lost,
missing, or even abducted.
We need your help!
Contact your local police station for a listing of missing children in your area,
or log on to www.missingkids.com
to obtain further information regarding missing children in your local community.
But the next face you see
may be a child that will need your help.
Help support America's missing!
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The new Italian government was sworn in today after a tense two-month-long political stalemate. But the ceremony was marred by an act of violence outside the prime minister's offices. NPR's Sylvia Pajoli reports a suspected gunman has been arrested after two law enforcement officers were injured.
First reports say the gunman, a 49-year-old, was acting alone. His motive is not known. The shots were fired half a mile away from where the government of Prime Minister Enrico Letta of the center-left Democratic Party was sworn in. Despite wide grassroots opposition in the center-left, Letta cobbled together an uneasy alliance with the Democrats' arch-rival, former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. Berlusconi is currently facing several trials and investigations. The new cabinet stands out for many new faces and a record 7 women out of 21 ministers, including the first non-white minister, Congo-born Cecile Kyenge, who will serve as Minister of Integration. The key post of Interior Minister went to Berlusconi's top political aide, Angelino Alfano. Silvia Foggioli, NPR News, Rome.
A government minister says the owner of an illegally constructed building that collapsed last week in Bangladesh is being brought back to the capital in a helicopter after authorities caught up with him today. He was arrested near the border with India. Cheers broke out at the building site, where rescuers are still searching for survivors. 9 were located today. The Federal Aviation Administration says the air traffic control system will resume normal operations by this evening. The announcement comes after lawmakers rushed a bill through Congress allowing the agency to suspend furloughs brought on by the federal spending cuts known as sequestration. Travelers were frustrated by delays, but now air travel expert Phil Derner says things should improve.
Once the control towers and centers are at full staffing, it should be immediate.
Republicans accuse the Obama administration of forcing the furloughs to raise pressure on Congress to roll back the sequester. The federal government's automatic budget cuts that started March 1st are beginning to be felt on a larger scale in some other places. Danielle Carson reports that in California, thousands of unemployed workers will feel the pinch.
Starting Monday, the weekly federal insurance benefits for some 400,000 unemployed workers will be trimmed by more than 17%, on average about $52 a week. Maurice Ensalem with the National Employment Law Project in Oakland, California, says these benefits are often the only shield against economic disaster.
Many have been unemployed for 7, 8, 9 months. So when you reach that point, you have tapped out your savings, and $50 a week, these days that's at least a bag of groceries, maybe two.
California is also losing at least $15 million in federal funds for job centers. Economists say that won't help to lower the state's 9.4% jobless rate, one of the highest in the country. For NPR News, I'm Danielle Carson in Los Angeles.
And from Washington, this is NPR News.
All right, folks, that was Sunday Morning Down, and we appreciate each and every last one of you hanging with us. And it's time for our final thoughts. Dr. Princess Odia, you're up first. 30 seconds.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jay. I enjoyed the show this morning. I just want to leave with this this statement here as I'm brought to understand love. Love is often ignored and misunderstood. Although its essence is what holds and creates positive change, yielding fulfillment, peace, and happiness. It's important for us to connect and embrace love and its truth collectively, lest we will remain in the consistent battle of people, families, nations, countries, and communities remaining unfulfilled and true purpose never found. Remember, love is not binding, and anything that binds you or contributes to you feeling guilty for your natural freedom, that is the future question. So right. I just am...
We have to wrap it up. I'm sorry. All right, Steve, we're less than a minute. Let's say goodbye to everyone now because I don't think we're going to make it. So listen, thank you guys for listening. We're going to finish out with our final thoughts, but thank you. We'll see you all next week if we lose a live feed, especially those on WCWK Radio. All right, Steve, go ahead, final thoughts.
I found it very disgusting that the President of the United States, Barack Obama, did a speech in support of Planned Parenthood. I find it very hypocritical because the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, a racist, made a statement that we need to get rid of the nappy weeds in speaking about black people. And I was very disgusted by that speech. And that's my final comment. God bless everyone.
All right. Jerome, final thoughts.
All right, don't listen to that. Now, here's my final thought. The Internal Revenue Service recouped about $5.5 billion under their new program just to reduce penalty and jail time. People brought their money back from overseas. The Packers signed Aaron Rodgers' $110 million extension through 2019, and the Federal Reserve is coming out with a new $100 bill. I don't know why it's all about money today, but that's it.
All right, and that's one of Jerome's fun facts. All right, Miss Elliott, the minute gets the first and last word. Final thoughts, my friend.
My final thoughts to this: we got 800,000 missing children of color. You know, if it's a child of color, or any child missing, we need to become advocates. We need to start writing to our local newspapers, our local media, anything that we can do to help these missing children come back home.
Folks, you know, Mr. Elias did make that comment about missing children of color. And listen, I want to correct him. It is 800,000 people a year, but there's 125,000 missing kids of color. Folks, we got to get out here and do something. We got to put the word out there. How can we sit back and criticize people for not doing what they're supposed to do when we don't take the initiative and do the things that we can do to help? Any little thing can help. You can send out an email to all your friends saying, look out for this person. It's so easy to paste and click. That's all you have to do. Paste, copy, do whatever. But you need to put the word out about this, because I'm telling you, folks, this is something that we really and truly need to pay attention to. And on that note, Mr. L.E.S., if it's Sunday, we're talking serious stuff. What time is it, my friend?
It's time for the serious side of the Jay Rowell Show.
All right, folks, listen, for Jerome, for Steve, for Dr. Princess O'Dea, and for Mr. Elias, I'm Jay. God bless. And remember, if it is Sunday and we're talking serious stuff, it is the serious side. Take care, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you right back here in a week. Don't go anywhere.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.